Welcome to Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host. As a writer, speaker, and former legislator, we discuss limiting government, fiscal responsibility, and fair taxation. I'm a mother of seven and a wife of one for over three decades, so I bring you my personal experience. And now it's time for Homefront with Cynthia Davis. And welcome to Homefront. Today we have a very interesting guest, Alice Patterson. She comes to us from the city of San Antonio, Texas. And Alice has an amazing story of how they fought against City Hall. You know the old expression, you can't fight City Hall. And they did. And they're still engaged in the battle, but it's getting interesting. This is a story you all have to hear about. Alice Patterson is the founder of Justice at the Gate. It's a San Antonio-based corporation focused on building the partnerships to mobilize Christians to pray effectively and vote righteously. So welcome to our show, Alice.
It's great to be here, Cynthia. Thanks for inviting me.
Is it sunny down there in San Antonio?
It is. It's a beautiful day.
I was there several years ago. I went when I was on the O'Fallon Board of Aldermen. And so I was one of those city council people that you're now consumed with trying to make sense out of. Every year, there's a national organization called the National League of Cities, hosts a wonderful conference. The first week of December, the elected officials from municipalities all over the country are invited to go and learn about how to better govern, how to make their city better, how to make their public policies fit with the agenda they want to promote. So I always enjoyed it. I learned a lot. In fact, they gave me an award for taking so many classes and pre-conference seminars, and I enjoyed it because it was for me an opportunity to understand municipalities, municipal government. I particularly enjoyed your river walk. And when we go to these different cities every year, each city would flaunt their best side. And the beautiful part about going in December is the river walk was so lovely decorated with all the Christmas decorations. And it truly had charm. The next time I came to San Antonio was when my son graduated from the Air Force Military Boot Camp. I don't know, it has a better name, but and there were 900 students in his graduating class. And San Antonio plays host to Lackland Air Force Base. Anybody who's ever had a child in the Air Force is very familiar with the beauty of San Antonio. But here's why we're talking today. Your city council in San Antonio made some decisions recently. Tell us what happened and how it drew you into getting involved in it.
Well, Cynthia, since you've been to San Antonio, you understand kind of the flavor of the city. This is a place where people come to have fun, to relax, to retire. It is a military city with four military bases and the Southern Command based here. But it is the seventh largest city in America, 1.2 million people, where everybody gets along. It is culturally Hispanic, 63%, then white, less than 6% black. It has the largest Martin Luther King march in America. So this is not a place where folks are usually fighting something. It's a place where they enjoy each other.
Except for the Alamo, Alice. I have to remind you.
I know, but that was a long time ago.
The Alamo is one of your gems, though. And
it is. It is. And it's historic. And this is a mission city. This city was founded to preach the gospel to natives. So it is, although we've had some bad history about that as well, What I'm trying to say is this is not a place where you ever imagine that it would be ground zero for a battle for biblical values, but that's what it became. There's a guy that has gone, for the last 20 years, has gone to every single city council meeting. And he alerted one of the pastors here about a non-discrimination ordinance that sounded really innocuous. They were just going to do some kind of internal changing of the city codes. But what they did was they added sexual orientation and gender identity to every one of the discrimination codes in the city. And this was a radical change from anything that had ever happened here. Now, last year, they did pass a domestic partner proposal that went through, sailed through the city council with only 2 negative votes out of 11. But this time, this was very alarming because it made it a misdemeanor to say anything negative about anyone in the LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community, their own language, or the issue in general. And so that's $500 a day, $15,000 a month, $90,000 for 6 months if you continue to not be in compliance with them.
So it was really an infringement on the First Amendment, freedom of speech. How did they get away with stomping on the U.S. Constitution?
It was really amazing. One of the young men, like 3 times they allowed the public to speak out. Over 2,000 people spoke against the ordinance. Less than 500 spoke in favor of it. But I remember especially a young adult in his early 20s saying, I can't believe I'm having to beg the City Council of San Antonio to uphold the Constitution because the First Amendment is the right to free speech. But in this situation, the homosexual community has freedom of speech. They can boycott. They can resist. They can even scream like they did in the city council when they got up and screamed against one of the city council members calling her a liar. All of that is okay if you're in the LGBT community, but you cannot do that if you have values that oppose it. And one of the things that came up specifically, there was a time that the city council could ask each other questions and we could be there, we just couldn't speak. And they were asking the city attorney questions. And this Diego Bernal, councilman in District 1, and the mayor, Julian Castro, which many say will be the vice presidential candidate with Hillary Clinton in 2016, he's the rising star in Democratic politics. He and Diego Bernal were really the force behind it. It really was the mayor, and he just found Diego Bernal to kind of stand up for him. But they were really excited that if you had a bakery or a T-shirt company and someone asked you to put something on a cake that or a T-shirt that you didn't agree with, you didn't have to put that slogan on there. So you were free to disagree with the message. But one of the councilwomen, Elisa Chan, who is Asian and from China, she asked, if you have a catering company and you're asked to cater a same-sex ceremony or a same-sex event, can you refuse? The attorney said, no, you cannot. That would be a misdemeanor. And we know that's true because in New Mexico, a flower shop refused to do a wedding, a same-sex wedding, and that the owner of that shop was found guilty, issued a $9,000 fine, and they've had to close their shop. And while this all was going on in San Antonio, there was something that happened in Colorado where a man who owned a bakery was asked to do a wedding cake for a same-sex ceremony, and he refused, and he was found guilty and fined.
See, as a champion of free markets and living in a country that we consider capitalistic, this is very surprising and disappointing, because market dynamics should be controlling how people govern themselves. If I want to turn away business, regardless of what kind of business it is, then it's my prerogative to turn away business, and I will injure myself financially by the loss of business. If I want to turn away enough business, I might go out of business because I refuse to take business any longer. But that's my choice, not my government's choice. The other thing holds true as well, that if government doesn't own my business, why are they telling me how to run my business? If we lived in a communist country, I can understand the government saying what we will and will not do for business. But in a free market economy, this defies all economic principles that we would tell a business owner what kind of business he has to have, what kind of sales he needs to make, and who he has to sell to.
True. And the man in Colorado who refused to make the wedding cake also explained that he did not make anything, any Halloween cookies or muffins or anything like that. The difference in that is there is not a national lobby that has made it illegal to not celebrate Halloween. But there is a national lobby, and it is an agenda. This is what we have to understand, because there were in San Antonio, the LGBT community wore red T-shirts, and the biblical values community wore blue. It wasn't all T-shirts, whatever, but we all wore blue. And so you could see a stark difference. And one of the women, who was obviously a lesbian, when she spoke, she said, "We don't want to go to your businesses if you don't want us. We have directories of people that are open to the LGBT community. No one wants to discriminate against anyone, and we're certainly not filled with hate. But here's the deal. It is an agenda. And once these proposals are enacted in cities, then the litigation begins. That Christian bakery owner in Colorado was specifically targeted. It wasn't that this same-sex couple couldn't find somebody to bake a wedding cake for them. It's that they want to punish someone. They don't want just equality. Now they want affirmation. And if we choose not to affirm their lifestyle, there is a price to pay. And now in San Antonio, it's illegal."
And just to give our listeners one more parallel, in my community, if a business chooses to use non-union labor, the unions can and sometimes will picket outside their business. And they will walk around with signs that say, "Do not patronize this business because they used non-union labor." That is a risk that the business owner takes. That is a natural private sector consequence that is faced by a business choosing non-union labor. That's how private sector deals with these issues. Why couldn't the homosexual simply do a protest outside this business, walk around carrying signs that say, "Don't shop at this bakery"? Why wouldn't they want to do their own hard work themselves? Why are they asking government to do their dirty work for them?
Well, they can do that, and it's perfectly legal for them to do. In San Antonio, it is not legal for someone who opposes same-sex marriage or whatever, the gay pride parade that the mayor rides in. You cannot hold a sign saying that you disapprove of that. It is a Class C misdemeanor. So it is totally muzzled. The plan is to muzzle people who will not affirm the LGBT lifestyle and agenda. And it's very dangerous in our nation.
Now, since you brought up the agenda, let me tell you from an insider's track of having been an elected official in a municipality how that works, because when I would go to the National League of Cities conference, there were other subgroups, constituent groups of the National Black Caucus, the National Hispanic Caucus, the Republicans in government, Democrats in government, women in municipal government. So I'm just naming some of the groups they had. Well, one of the first conferences I went to with National League of Cities, they were forming a new constituency group, the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender group, their caucus. Now, here's what's mysterious about it. Why can't they just lump it all under one word? Why do they make us have to say four words? I think it's because they want us to focus on the perversion and the different forms of perversion, so that if you don't like one form, you might like something else, and therefore they have to be all-encompassing. But certainly it gives us a mouthful, and now they've added Q on the end. So of all surprises, the room that they gave me at my hotel was right next door to a room where the homosexuals were having a party the first night. And I have to say, what I heard through the walls was horrible, but they put in their program book on the agenda that their purpose for meeting was to discuss how they can change public policies to be more favorable and meet each other and have fun. But it goes beyond just meeting each other and have fun. In all these caucus meetings, and I've attended a few just to understand the different groups that made up the National League of Cities, they do show model legislation. They do come up with ideas of how we can share what works in one city may likely work in another city. And so it has the effect of causing ideas to metastasize quicker. If we had a success over here, it's likely you'll have a quicker success over there if you follow our recipe. I'm only informing you of this because it's coming to a city near you, and whether you live near San Antonio or not doesn't matter, because it is spreading throughout the entire country. It's going to the big cities, it's going to the little cities, it's going to any city where somebody has already been seated with these ideas. So you talked about the agenda. I am very familiar with the effort to pass what they call these non-discrimination ordinances. But what I'm not familiar with is the idea that San Antonio went a step beyond. And what did they say about the elected officials cannot run for office? Explain that one to us.
The meaning about an LGBT person in an individual or in general, you may not run for city office or be appointed to a board or receive a city contract.
What if an elected official, say one of the city council members, was opposed to this ordinance and spoke out against it? What does that mean for their opportunity to run for re-election? Does that mean they have to resign?
I don't know the answer to that. I absolutely don't know the answer to it. Probably what it will do more than anything is it'll hinder board appointments and contracts with the city. Because now, as you know, a city council cannot let a contract for any reason. They don't have to have a non-discrimination ordinance to do that. But now they have even more teeth to disapprove of an organization that they don't like their values, or a business that they don't like their values.
Okay, well, let me ask you this for an example. We were at Wall Builders last month, and David Barton explained to us that Starbucks is openly endorsing homosexual legislation, okay? So there are some companies that do, in their values, support ideology, and they do with their funding and advertising dollars support a political philosophy. Now, you're saying that if an engineering firm supported traditional values, supported marriage, supported issues that are building up families instead of supporting homosexuality, then that might be a reason for your city council to not give an award to the engineering firm that may have had the best price?
Correct. That is true. Another thing that I just thought of, and I don't really know how this will work, because what happens is, as you know, the ordinance is enacted, and then it goes to the courts. So I'm thinking this is how it could work in the future. Someone who was adamant against this city council ordinance is running for office. And someone from the Human Rights Campaign, because that is the national organization for homosexuals, and they were actually on the ground since January of this year, working for this ordinance. They were working with the mayor and Diego Bernal to get this passed. So it was a national focus, and San Antonio was chosen, I think, because of all the reasons I stated in the beginning, that it has a sleepy, it's a large city with a sleepy mentality. So what could happen is someone from the Human Rights Campaign could file suit and keep a person's name off the ballot because they had been vocal about this issue, because it is now in black and white. It's sealed with the legal approval of the city that you can discriminate against someone that they see discriminates against homosexuals.
Hi, friends. Do you like what you're hearing? Then go to my website. It's CynthiaDavis.net and sign up for my newsletter. You'll get all this information and more when you sign up for my email reminding you of when you'll hear another podcast and letting you know what's coming up next. Besides, we always have a little bit of humor at the end. So go to CynthiaDavis.net and stay in the loop. For those of you who don't like email, go to my Facebook page. It's called Homefront with Cynthia Davis. And make sure you click the like button. That way, you'll have a convenient way to see what we're doing and to get the word when another podcast is released.
Let it shine before men.
That's Homefront with Cynthia Davis on Facebook. My website is CynthiaDavis.net. That's where we keep all our good stuff. So if you want to get our newsletter and find more podcasts, go to CynthiaDavis.net. Hey, let's stay in touch. You say you think they picked San Antonio, but I have a message for our listeners. They picked your city too, folks. They've picked every city in this country, and they're not going to go away until they've accomplished that. I went to University City when they passed this similar ordinance promoting homosexuality, but that's in St. Louis County, where you expect to see a higher concentration of people who don't adhere to the traditional values that made this country strong. When the ordinance passed, the folks speaking for decency were clearly in a minority. We were like, there are three of us in a whole room filled of maybe 75 of them. I went to Springfield, Missouri to speak against one of these ordinances, and that's a more rural area. And it's in the Bible Belt of Missouri. To my surprise, there were equal numbers of proponents and opponents. I couldn't believe it. The city clerk was going to take them one at a time, and then they cut it off after 2 hours. I was disappointed there, too, that there were a lot of good people in the community that came out, but nothing like you. You had 2,000 people come out to comment, and you said 1,500 of them were in favor of traditional marriage?
2,000 people were in favor of traditional marriage. Less than 500 were in favor of the proposal. But here's a bright spot, and I think a lot of people miss, and I think it probably was missed in St. Louis because St. Louis is 50% black. And sometimes in our mind, we equate black values with the Democratic Party, but marriage is the number one issue, traditional marriage, that will mobilize black voters. And it was true in San Antonio. The only person on the city council that changed their vote was the one sitting black councilwoman. And black pastors went to see her en masse. Many, many different meetings of four or five pastors going together and talking with her. The black community spoke out against this. And I wish we had had more blacks on the city council because it would have been defeated if we had had a majority of black folk on the city council.
Why is it that the black folks are doing better than the white folks on this issue?
I think it's because of biblical values. And I know that a lot of folks don't understand it. I didn't understand it years ago. Now I do. But in 2008, when President Obama was on the ballot in California, he got 98% of the black vote. On the same ballot was Prop 8 that said marriage is between one man and one woman. 77% of the black vote voted in favor of traditional marriage. If it had not been for the black vote in California, they would have lost that vote for traditional marriage. Now, the court struck it down. The Ninth Circuit struck it down, so they were not able to keep it, one man and one woman. But when the people of California voted at least two times, it seems like it was on the ballot three times, they voted in favor of traditional values, of traditional marriage, largely because of the black vote.
Well, Alice, what brought you to this debate? What is it that impassions you to stay with this? What are you going to do next?
Well, I didn't just come to this. I've been involved in the political arena since 1984 as the local Eagle Forum president, and then I was field director for Texas Christian Coalition here in Texas for 5 years. And I've worked in different states. I worked in Missouri in 2012 for the general election, mobilizing biblical values voters. And here in San Antonio, a wonderful thing has happened, and that is the church has awakened. And black, white, Hispanic pastors are meeting together for prayer and action. And there is, you know, I mentioned to you earlier before we got on the call that we tried lives without being organized, and it's very difficult. It looks like confusion, and we were not successful because the vote was 8-3, but there's an election, a city election in May 2015, and we just had David Barton here, and he taught three different groups of pastors about how to recruit biblical valued candidates, able men that fear God, who love truth and hate dishonest gain. And there is a coalition now of pro-family organizations, of pastors of every denomination and every race that are focused on city council and on a biblical worldview and biblical values. And it's really exciting to me. And it's hard in a sleepy city, like I said. We're not used to mobilizing. And folks don't like to be against people here, because this is a very merciful city. The Hispanic culture loves people. They're very servant-hearted and welcoming, and that's the majority of the city. But the sleeping giant has awakened, and we're working together to put together a plan, a systematic plan, so that every church can have a coordinator. 100% of the folks in the church would be registered to vote and vote. And, you know, if we do that, if we just mobilize the churches, we can change San Antonio.
Did you say that your one mistake is you got mobilized before you got organized?
Well, I don't think it was really a mistake. It was that we had a crisis in our city that we had to address, and people came together because of the crisis. But we were not organized. It wasn't methodical. We didn't have pastors meeting together. We didn't have a network of pro-family groups where we were sharing information and trying to look at the city and field candidates. You know that less than 7% of the registered voters in San Antonio voted in the last city election. And nobody fielded candidates that that had biblical values. We were really asleep. Now, when you get into partisan elections and you have the two parties working in the elections, there's more activity because you have parties fueling that. But in city elections, when they're not partisan, when they're nonpartisan, and you don't have the political parties driving it, most people don't even know there is an election, much less know who is on the ballot, except the people they recognize, like our mayor. So it would probably be rare if you could go to a church of 1,000 people and find 5 people who know who their city councilman is. We're just not educated.
So how are you going?
We're going to be.
How are you feeling the outcome will be now that you're getting yourselves more organized?
Well, we'll see. We don't need to field a candidate in every one of the districts. We need 6 votes. 2 of the people who voted in favor of it have stepped down to run for other office, but they are in safe seats. So that will not be difficult, but we've got to get 3 other. We've got to mobilize in 3 of the districts, and so that we can have the votes. The mayor is term limited, so he can't run again. I think he's term limited in 2015. So I don't think he can run again. He can run one more term. I'm not really positive about that, but he only has 1 vote on the council. He has a bully pulpit where he's on the media and he can go around town and talking to people, but he only has 1 vote on the council, so we've got to have 4 more people.
How many people are on the city council?
11. There are 10 council members and the mayor.
What is your advice to other people living in other parts of the country if you were going to tell them what you know now and what you wish you had known earlier? What would you tell them?
Well, it's really important for pastors to come together across denominational and racial lines and begin to find each other and prepare for these kinds of things, to appoint someone in their congregation to be their civic awareness coordinator, salt and light person, whatever, that they'll do voter registration, that they can distribute nonpartisan voter guides and voter information. We just need to be educated, and we also need to be connected, because even if there are a lot of people who know what to do, but we're not connected, then we're not going to really have something that changes our cities.
You're right. And as far as electoral victories go, if you were here in Missouri in 2012, you saw some depressing times. I can tell you what happened in Missouri. We had an honorable man, Todd Akin, running against Claire McCaskill. They were as different as night and day on just about all the issues, and yet the voters said they wanted Claire McCaskill. You know, what happened is the voters proved to us once again that they'd rather have somebody with a really nice haircut and fancy suits and somebody who speaks well than somebody who they considered to be a buffoon, who misspoke, somebody who wasn't bright enough to know what causes conception. I mean, I heard so much negative vitriolic talk against Todd Akin, And it what surprised me about it was I believed the voters were smarter than that. I believed that the voters would vote based on issues and morals. And instead, the voters voted on externals. How do you explain that? And sadly, Todd Akin was actually in good company with a lot of other quality losers. Shane Scholar ran for Secretary of State. He got beaten, and he wasn't even going up against an incumbent. It was an open seat. We had a senator lose his Senate seat, and he was the incumbent. A very good job.
Well, I know exactly what happened, because I was actually working in the Todd Akin campaign.
Tell us.
And I know the numbers afterwards, because I've been mobilized in Iowa to kick out the judges that voted, that struck down the Defense of Marriage Act, et cetera. So what happened there, I thought that we didn't do our job to mobilize evangelicals, but there was a greater evangelical turnout in Missouri than any other time in the history of Missouri. What happened was that because when I saw those ads the last 2 weeks over and over and over with Mitt Romney saying, get out of the race, John McCain saying if he is elected to the Senate, he will not be welcomed here, and Roy Blunt telling him to get out of the race, I knew there was no way we were going to win that. And what happened was Romney won Missouri by 57%, and there was a greater evangelical turnout than ever before, but what we lost was moderate Republicans who were embarrassed by what Todd said, and they're embarrassed by the pro-life issue. And so we lost moderate Republicans, and we lost some of the independents who didn't have biblical values. It was really heartbreaking because Todd is a very honorable man. His family are some of the finest people I've ever met, and absolutely the finest elected official I've ever worked for, and I've worked for a lot of them. It was really sad. You know, he said 6 seconds of whatever for his comment that went over and over and over, and maybe if someone could have got him in at the beginning and coached him on what to say, it would have helped. But when the Republicans turn against Republicans, which is what happened with Romney, McCain, and Blunt, there was no way for him to win.
I think we're going to see more Republicans turning against Republicans, because I'm watching fundraising, I'm seeing who is lining up on different sides. I'm confused by how Republicans would want to turn on each other, but I can explain my best way of understanding it is they would rather lose the election to a Democrat than to have somebody more conservative in that seat.
Well, that's true in some places. I think this was an anomaly because of the comment that Todd made. And if he could have rewound the tape, he certainly would have. But there is always division in the primaries. But what has happened in the past is that Republicans come together in the general election. But this was not true of this race. The RNC was against him. You know, other national Republicans were against him. And when those ads came out with the big three saying that he should get out, he wouldn't be welcome there, you just can't overcome that kind of thing.
Well, I'll tell you what my perception. I didn't have any trouble understanding what Todd was saying when he said it, but he answered the wrong question. He was asked, how big of a problem is rape? And he said, not that big of a problem, because it doesn't result in pregnancy very often. That was the wrong thing for him to say.
You're right.
He needed to answer, do you think people should be aborted because of the circumstances surrounding their conception? Yes or no? When he answered the question, how big of a problem is rape, he confused people, muddied the water, and gave his opponent an opportunity to pummel him, which is exactly what happened. Yet, had it not been that quote, you would have heard other quotes, because people who are bent on trying to attack each other, and I believe that the John McCains of the world and the Roy Blunts of the world didn't want Todd there. And John Ashcroft even was part of writing a letter. And Jim Talent, another former senator, all wrote a letter to Todd that was published asking him to get out of the race. So you're right, the Republicans turned on him. But I think they turned on him not for the Charles Jayco interview, but they turned on him because of his values. They are like, please don't send us another right-wing nut. Well, we'll be okay. We have to understand, though, what happened so that we can move forward and be smarter in the future. I don't know if the heart of America wants to have people who are moral and decent. I don't think we are there in our values. I think people are too busy looking for the American idol and wanting the most popular person, and we do like jumping on bandwagons. And as long as we value the bandwagon higher than we value how a candidate stacks up with the Ten Commandments, we're going to lose races every day. We're going to lose more races, and we're going to get more people who are morally reprehensible. I mean, there have been so many stories coming out of Washington, D.C. of scandals, and even in Jefferson City, when I spent 8 years in the Missouri State Legislature, there were people who were acting in a morally debased manner, and they should not have done that. And yet their district said, yes, that's the person I want to represent me. So there's something foundationally flawed at the beginning when people say that's irrelevant. My understanding began when Bill Clinton was in the White House doing things with his intern, Monica Lewinsky, and he convinced America that what you do in the Oval Office really isn't a factor as long as your public policy is in line with what the people want. And that kind of attitude has caused more damage to the moral fiber of our country than anything else. I want to talk about your website. If people want to learn more, they can go to sahumanrightscoalition.com, and SA stands for San Antonio Human Rights Coalition.com. So I encourage all of our listeners to go learn from your lesson. Why should we all get skinned knees and elbows when you've taken some of the brunt of it for us and we can learn? Tell us what's going to happen in the next chapter of the fight. You're not going away, are you?
No, we're not going away. In fact, on December 30th, we're having an all-day prayer and planning meeting with key leaders so that we can decide what to do. We have connected with Pastor Mark Gonzalez with the Hispanic Action Network, and your listeners could go there too, HispanicActionNetwork.com. He's got an excellent DVD in English and in Spanish about how a pastor can appoint someone in his church, and 100% voter registration, 100% turnout. So we just got to begin to organize now so that we can mobilize not people to go to city council and speak out against something, to people who don't have a biblical worldview, but to elect folks who do have a biblical worldview.
You know, when I hear stuff like this, it makes me wish I could move down to San Antonio and run for your city council. But the people in Missouri would miss me. So
that's right.
You can't run for everything. We have to pick our battles. We have to pick who's going to run. We have to be intelligent, and we have to support the good guys. I have never been more disappointed than when it was my turn to run for Senate, and a lot of the Christian folks preferred a morally decadent incumbent senator over me. And I was befuddled by how that could possibly happen. And yet I believe that God will let the Christians bear the brunt of their bad decisions. They thought, well, if the incumbent should win, and chances are likely the incumbent will win because he had a third of $1 million, but when people make those decisions, which horse they're going to jump on, David Barton was the one who told me, you better vote for whoever best stacks up with the Ten Commandments. That's the only way you'll ever get good government.
I agree.
Well, thank you, Alice. Is there one last parting word you want to say to our listeners today?
You know, we've got to wake up and show up and engage. I think that's the most important thing. We just need to engage because it doesn't take a lot of people to change our nation. But we've got to have people that have a biblical moral worldview making our decisions. And when we do, then we don't have to worry about lobbying because they're going to do the right thing.
Well, that's a great message. Thank you, Alice, for being on our show today. We certainly do appreciate you. Thank you for giving us a few minutes out of your day.
Thanks. God bless.
God bless you, too. This has been another edition of Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis and hope you enjoyed our program. Please join us next week when we offer another infusion of truth, honesty, and solutions that will grow people bigger and shrink government smaller. Thank you for joining us. See you next week.